It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, as we're talking about your legal life and invite you to call in and join us as well. And you can with our local numbers as well as the 800 number you just heard. And that's 247-7282 in Carteret, Craven, and Pamlico County and 353-4674 in Onslow County. And join us this morning is Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing well.
Good.
Last week we started talking about estate administration.
We did. And I think that I can talk about that again this week.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wes is in a jury trial this morning and yesterday and probably all week. And so let's continue to kind of decipher and demystify some of the issues, Ben, around estate administration. Another word for that, a common word, is probate.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be so much misunderstanding about that.
Yes.
It's a scary word to most people. They think years of delay and tens of thousands of dollars, evidently. And that just so oftentimes is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the probate law, if you will, is out there so many times where it is very advantageous to allow a decedent's affairs to be settled through the standard statutes and case law of North Carolina under the laws of probate and administration. And a classic example of that, Ben, is the lining up of creditors.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after someone dies, if you open up an estate and you notice the creditors, which is that small little boilerplate print that's in the back of the newspaper, in the county of the estate for sure, and sometimes in neighboring counties if you think that there could be creditors in that county. You know, here in Carteret, we have so many people that live on the line between Carteret and Craven or Carteret and Onslow.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that, you know, you place that in the newspaper. They then, of course, have 3 months, creditors, that is, to bring forth their claims.
Right.
And if they do not bring them to the attention of the executor within that 3-month period, then they're going to be barred.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why you really should not pay estate bills during that 3-month period. There are exceptions to that when you have, you know, clearly
a
very liquid estate,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
A large estate, if you will, where you know that there's going to be no question about creditors,
mm-hmm.
and that all the bills are going to get paid. But that so oftentimes is not the case, Ben.
Right.
So oftentimes, the executor is very concerned, about the extent of the liabilities that could vest in the estate. And if we hear that during some of our initial consultations with the client, then what we advise is that, well, fine, let's just pause. Let's let all the bills come in during this 3-month period.
Mm-hmm.
Let's then line them up and let's then pay them according to the statute of North Carolina as to what is a priority.
Right.
And, of course, priorities always are going to be secured creditors,
mm-hmm.
creditors that have a secured interest in either land or maybe an automobile, a boat, or something of that nature, a secured creditor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have unsecured creditors, such people as credit cards and just open accounts at, you know, Lowe's or Best Buy or wherever happen to be.
Yeah.
You know, those are going to come second to that. One of the issues that always is hovering around the file in a situation like this is that the executor is concerned that they might be personally liable for the bills. And this is particularly true in the spousal context where you have, you know, a wife who is settling the estate of her husband.
Right.
Or the husband who's settling the estate of the wife. and we really do have to remember that the wife is not responsible for the debts of the husband and the husband responsible for the debts of the wife if they are individually singular held liabilities.
Okay.
We have had
back to a lot of our previous discussions about how things are
we've
titled.
We've had some very, very, very favorable results in our office through the years, applying this, this body of law to the estate administration. And again, you're not going to be able to do this without being in probate. Okay. I mean, what the creditor is going to want to see is a 90-day inventory, possibly even a draft copy of the final accounting of the estate, which shows that the husband in his name had insufficient assets to pay off these credit card debts.
Right.
The home is joint, tenants by entirety. The life insurance, the annuities, the IRA were by beneficiary designation to the wife. The accounts maybe were joint with right of survivorship and went to her by operation of law. This is the kind of thing that a creditor is going to look at. And trust me, Ben, in saying that they understand this.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, they've been down this
road. They've been down this road, and they understand that if these inventories, these probate inventories, indicate that there are insufficient assets, or maybe that the assets are very minimal compared to the liability, then they're ready to come to the table and either mark the account satisfied for lack of funds to pay, or certainly compromise the claim.
Okay. Now, you bring up several really good points here. And again, if folks have questions, they can call in at 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers about estate administration, about accessing accounts, et cetera, all those things that come up. But you bring up a good point. You've mentioned in years past, too, that the mail can be your friend. I mean, this is, and now it'd be emails as well, is that there are accounts that need to come in. So after you post that, that 90-day period is a period where you can start collecting. You don't have to act on those things right in that first week.
You do not. The law does not require that. of course, there's a general concept of reasonableness, the prudent man standard, prudent person standard, that is hovering around all of this in terms of what would a prudent executor do? What would a reasonable person do? Well, a reasonable person cannot just pay a bill with blinders on. They need to know what all the bills are, just like we do in our household, if you will, or in our business life. We've got to look at the totality of circumstances before we can make a financial move. And the same is true for an executor. An executor is not held to a standard whereby someone dies on, you know, during the weekend, and within a couple of weeks, all of the bills are to be paid. This is this can many times be a mistake to pay them with that kind. And this is very disconcerting news.
Right.
Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cough this morning, Ben. But
that's you know, you bring up something though that I think is very important for folks to hear, because as an executor, you're not likely to have that position more than once or twice in your life. Whereas the creditor is in that position all the time.
Correct.
Great
lady, great mature lady from in her 50s or 60s from Emerald Isle called me yesterday, and her father has died, and she is the executor. She is also the only heir, and she was very distressed that a bill had come in and had on it, you know, past due. And you know, my dad always paid his bills on time, and you know, he would be turning over in his grave right now to know that a bill had not been paid in a timely manner. Well, what is timely, Ben?
Right.
This gentleman is no longer living. And with explanation to this client, she was relieved to hear that the law does not require her to immediately pay her father's bills within a 30-day period, such as she was doing when he was living.
Right, exactly.
Okay, the circumstances have dramatically changed. Now, Ben, we are talking about, it sounds like we're talking about creditor debtor law, but we aren't. We're talking about estate administration.
Right, exactly.
And what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, we have to understand that certainly in the spousal context, many times the husband or the wife know all of the facts and circumstances of their, of the financial life of their loved one. But when you're dealing with, you know, 20, 30 year old, even 40 year old children who have lost a parent.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're dealing with a brother or sister, okay, who is the executor for their deceased brother or their deceased sister. I have a lot of these kinds of files in the office, one right now concerning two sisters, and one sister died, and the surviving sister is her executor. Well, she doesn't know all of the financial.
Sure.
She has hints. She has pieces of the puzzle.
So she needs time to learn it.
But she needs time. And the law requires that we kind of resolve ourselves to this, as you say, receive all of the mail. Okay? The mail is the estate's best friend. And over the course of 3 months, 4 months, a quarter, we're going to know so much more. So many more pieces of the puzzle are going to come to light as a result of us monitoring that mail and then organizing these bills.
All right. We're going to take a short break and invite your questions as well at 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. If you would like to join us and ask questions about estate administration, about probate and wills and all the things that come up with that as well, too. We'll answer your questions as best as possible with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Cecil Harvell with us. You can go on their website, too, harvellandcollins.com. Spell it all out, harvellandcollins.com, and we'll have more in a moment. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And Wes is in a jury trial today, and Cecil is with us. We're talking about estate administration, and welcome your calls at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Ben, I think that what we have to remember is that the process involves filing the estate documents with the clerk of court. And then you receive what is known as letters testamentary, which is your permission slip, or basically your authority to be able to get to all of the accounts, the different stocks, to be able to get to the information necessary to make these, begin to make these informed decisions.
Right, right.
After 90 days or at the 90-day period, the executor then needs to give a 90-day inventory. What are we beginning to see at the three-month period relative to the assets in this estate? Now, many times this inventory then has to be amended when we go to do a final accounting to close the account because because more assets or the numbers might change or the appraisals maybe have not quite come in, things of that nature. But generally speaking, on the 90 day inventory, we're going to need to begin to show the clerk of court exactly what we think the picture of the estate is looking like. And then you go on through the process of looking at these bills, putting them in the order that the statute allows, getting them paid, and begin to make distributions. Okay, under the will. You asked the question during the break about medical bills. Medical bills are unsecured. They operate much like a credit card in terms of, you know, they are not going to be a secured transaction like a deed of trust on a house or a lien on a car, you know, a boat loan. Those are all going to be secured. A medical bill is going to be unsecured and is going to fall into the classification, a class known as unsecured creditors.
And so if you have a person who perhaps is taken to the hospital and they have to have a lot of medical procedures done, but they're not in any position to do it, the person who had the medical power of attorney has that authority, right? And then once somebody perhaps has passed away, then it's the up to the executor.
Correct.
Right.
And so, it's astonishing. You have wives, let's say, that come in who have lost their husband. They have a lot of fear and anxiety about the probate process.
Right.
They've heard from their friends and neighbors that, oh gosh, try to avoid that if you, if at all possible.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when we line up the bills of the estate, we begin to see that they literally are going to save. I mean, I've had files where, you know, it can be $100,000, large numbers, $50,000, $40,000, $70,000, you know, all because of the fact that we do, in fact, go through the process of showing the creditor. Because the creditor is not just going to take our word for the fact that, you know, the assets are not in the estate, the beneficiaries of the IRA were the spouse, the home was joint with tenants by entirety. They're going to have to see this on affirmative statements. Let's keep in mind that these inventories and statements filed with the clerk in the estate are under oath. They are under oath, and they therefore carry with them, you know, a degree of accuracy. And therefore, the creditor is going to look at that, and the creditor then is going to be able to understand that the assets just simply are not there to pay, you know, $90,000 worth of medical bills,
right,
or $10,000 credit card at Lowe's, or whatever the case might be.
And so, when you have those questions of the creditors coming up, and you're getting to that point where you've done that 90-day filing, then what happens after that?
Well, after the 90-day filing is when the real work begins. Now we do have the information at the table, usually. We know what the debts are. We know if any claims have been filed against the estate. And we begin the transfer, the actual transfer of assets. I always like to say that probate is really the changing, the orderly changing of title to an asset.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I mean, there has to be an order to this, Ben, as all of our listeners know. I mean, if someone dies, what's going to happen to an account at the bank? What's going to happen to their vehicle, their stock, if they have any, their real estate, if they own any, their LLC, their corporation? Each of these assets, the title to this asset now is going to need to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to need to be modified. And the process of changing the title from the husband to the wife, or from the mother and father who have both died to the two children, that process itself is, in fact, probate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the answer to your question is during months 3, 4, 5, depending on, again, the nature and extent of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
But during those months, those are the months that that activity is occurring. Deeds are done. Stock certificates in LLCs and membership interest in LLCs, stock certificates in corporations are endorsed, and special meetings are held within that organization to transfer those membership interests to the beneficiaries. The IRAs are processed. The life insurance is processed. All of the processing and the changing of the title is occurring.
Right.
And usually, again, depending on the nature, the extent of the file,
mm-hmm.
within about 4, 5, 6 months, that work is done. In small to medium sized estates, I would say,
mm-hmm.
and we're ready to gear up to close the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And before we close the estate, the question has to be asked of the executor, you know, do you really feel that all of the assets of the decedent have been transferred? Is there anything left out there? I have a lady who did not open up an estate, a surviving spouse, a wife who,
mm-hmm.
who just recently has come in. She did not open up an estate. She was trying to avoid that process for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, she has come in. Now a problem has evolved because she finds that her husband had interest in 3 LLCs,
mm-hmm.
Kind of domiciled in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and that none of these had been processed, not to mention the fact that there were income tax returns, K-1s that came in from these entities. There have been distributions that have now been made to her. And of course, obviously, what needed to happen is that an estate did need to be opened,
mm-hmm.
and that that these membership interests in these LLCs had to be transferred to
her. Right.
So we are now doing that. And
I think maybe some people probably avoid that, not only the probate idea, but it's the idea of closure. You know, there are some emotional attachments to having to go open that estate and take care of that stuff as well.
Probably. Probably. But more than anything else, Ben, is just the anxiety of the word probate.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that we are in the state of North Carolina, and we are in the county of Carteret and Craven and Onslow and Pamlico, where the clerks of court are so very efficient and friendly and willing to help. And the process here is just not riddled with delay.
We'll have more to come in a moment here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, on Let's Talk Legal right after this. Welcome back here to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell is with us here today. And Cecil, as we are wrapping up for this part of the program, again, we are at that point where people are having to make some real decisions now. And we're in months, like you said, 3, 4, and 5, or 4, 5, and 6, where a lot of the work has to be done.
Yes, that's right. These transfer documents have to be done, and stocks have to be changed, and we have to make sure that if there is necessity or clarity in needed on a real estate holding, that is taken care of. Things of this nature are done during that process. And then, of course, the information, the final statements come in that show zero balances on the various accounts or stocks or whatever, the IRAs or whatever the case might be. And we're preparing now to show the public record that all of the assets have been transferred.
Mm-hmm.
And we file a final counting that will not only track the closure of the assets, but also will track the payment of these assets to the various beneficiaries.
Okay.
And we're ready to close and dismiss the executor.
So at that point, though, everybody would in many cases, everybody just goes home, but sometimes there are challenges, right?
Well, you don't want to rush through the process.
This is one another reason to
be
patient.
Some sort of asset not changed,
right.
Some title not yet changed. That's of course what happened to the great lady that I just told you about just recently come in.
Mm-hmm.
She just wasn't aware that this needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that this would just transfer to her automatically.
Right, because she's probably named as the beneficiary, you know. So.
Right, in the will she is.
Right.
But then the process is much more simple. I think that's what we need to conclude on today. Much more simple, I think, than the general public is aware. It costs a whole lot less. Most people that come into our office, by the time the process is done, the comments are being made such as, you know, gosh, this was so much easier, so much less expensive than I thought. These were the best, you know, monies that I ever spent hiring you to help me through this. Those are the kinds of things that we hear most of the time,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Because again, we're in the state of North Carolina, a very user-friendly state when it comes to probate and estate administration, and the costs are just not as significant as people think.
Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of people believe that all of this can be done by themselves, and maybe in a very simple case it can, but it's rarely that simple.
It just depends, Ben. We see a lot of files where after the, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes with the client after someone has died, we say, listen, there's just no need for us to be involved as a law firm.
Right.
If you have any questions in a week or two or a month or so, get back with us, but you go ahead to the courthouse and handle the estate. It just depends.
Okay. HarvellandCollins.com is the website. 252-726-9050.